Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, May 30th, 2024. Bright Ranch legal battles continue despite last summer's jury verdict. By Rob D'Amico. Rob at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio County. Legal wrangling among heirs to the historic Bright Ranch continues, with ongoing petitions lobbed at each other in court. All after a significant ruling last summer on who gets to control the ranch's future failed to quell the family feud over the land's trust. Last week, District Judge Tryon Lewis, sitting in for the case at the 394th District Court in Marfa, ruled against brothers Mac and Bo White and dismissed their petition for a restraining order against their brother James Jim White III, claiming he and his son were engaging in tortious interference of contract and defamation and libel. Court filings show that Mac and Bo were angry with Jim and his son, Quattro White, for not giving free rein to the Border Patrol to operate on the Bright Ranch, for removing Border Patrol monitors, and for trying to cancel a contract with a hunting outfitter initiated by Mac, Bo, and another sibling, Hester. The most recent conflicts appear to be a result of the brothers being designated by court order as co-tenants on the ranch, meaning they theoretically are supposed to work together for the best interests of each other and the ranch and the income generated by the trust. But realistically, it means brothers engaged in years of bitter battles in the dispute might show up at their shared ranch house at the same time and also might seek contractual agreements with competing interests, particularly for hunting leases. The legal battles began in 2018 when Mac and Bo sued Jim for breach of fiduciary duty, claiming he, as a designated trustee to manage the land, was operating the ranch to enrich himself while not generating enough money for his brothers as beneficiaries of the trust. A jury in that case rendered a verdict in June agreeing with the plaintiff brothers, and the court eventually ordered the removal of Jim as trustee, the division of the family trust into separate trusts for each sibling, and found good cause for the modification of the trust to allow for the sale of the Bright Ranch land. Jim, however, has appealed the ruling to the 8th District Court of Appeals in El Paso, stopping any sale of the land and leaving the future of Bright Ranch as a whole in limbo, possibly for years. Also at play is a lawsuit filed in October by Jim's children, Quattro, Marty Wright White, and Clinton White, against Mac, Bo, and their wives, Julie and Kathleen, in Bastrop County. The suit alleges the defendants violated agreements governing each of their own trusts, which would have negatively impacted the plaintiffs as potential heirs to the trusts, and the suit asks for $27 million. That lawsuit also takes aim at both Mac and Bo for adopting the same 60-year-old adult son, Jeffrey Connor, allegedly to create an heir to their trusts, since they didn't have children. The ranch land at the center of the battle is estimated to be worth at least $60 million, but court records show the legal squabbles also center around philosophical differences, with Jim and his son Quattro wanting to preserve most of the ranch and brothers Mac and Bo more of the mindset to sell what the 25% of their trust holds in land. The Bright Ranch, nestled in the heart of eastern Presidio County, north of Capote Peak, played an important role in the county's history. Lucas Bright settled the land in 1885 and eventually established a 125,000-acre, thriving Highland Hereford cattle ranch. The ranch headquarters became a town of sorts, with a store, post office, and school. In 1917, Mexican outlaws raided the ranch, took horses and goods, and killed three people. Outrage over the raid led to the Porvenir Massacre, the killing of 15 Mexican-American men and boys, led by a posse of Texas Rangers and local ranchers. Lucas Bright's granddaughter, Jane, married James Elmer White, Jr., thus transforming the Bright name into the White Dynasty. Jane died in 2010, and Elmer died in 2013, leaving their four children, who are now at odds in the courts. Hester Ann White, James E. White III, Jim, Beauregard Bright White, Beau, and Edward McMinn White, Mac. Having spent much of his life living on and working the Bright Ranch, Jim's son Quattro also has played a significant role in the legal battle. In legal proceedings this spring, Mac and Beau alleged Jim and Quattro were illegally representing themselves as sole decision makers for the ranch, and that their words and actions against the Border Patrol and the hunting outfitter they contracted damaged Mac and Beau financially and in reputation. Filings from the brothers also accused Quattro of contempt of court and criminal trespass for leaving behind furniture at a ranch house and for some of his work on the land. Jim, Quattro, Mac, and Beau declined to comment because the legal proceedings are ongoing. Hester said she would not comment because it's not a worthwhile story for the public. Technical filing errors and the March resignation of a trustee for all the ranch trusts, former state comptroller Susan Combs, left legal hearings this spring in a bit of chaos. At last week's ruling, Judge Lewis ultimately agreed with Quattro's contention that he had free speech rights under the Texas Citizens Participation Act to communicate with Kaylin Ahrens of Ahrens Ranch and Wildlife in the Border Patrol, objecting to them being on the ranch. So his actions were not tortious interference with Mac, Beau, and Hester's dealings. A hearing in Alpine on June 20th will focus on Jim's petition for a declaratory judgment against Mac, Beau, and Hester. Jim alleges that his siblings are trying to run the Bright Ranch under majority rule, meaning his siblings can make all the decisions they want on hunting and grazing leases and general upkeep. Jim maintains that co-tenancy does not operate that way under Texas law and claims he and Quattro have paid for significant repairs and utilities at the ranch without receiving any compensation from Mac, Beau, and Hester. Court records show who gets hunting leases is a major source of contention in the co-tenancy. Purporting to act as a majority, Hester Ann, Beau, and Mac apparently voted to decline a hunting lease to Jim Bragg, an outfitter from El Paso, Texas, which guaranteed income when combined with the Chris Shoppa lease of $304,000 annually, with potential for greater income, depending on the game taken, stated a filing by Jim. No members of the White family are employed by Breck. Unable to deliver all four interests to Breck, Jim leased his trust's hunting rights to Capote Enterprises, LLC, the Capote lease, an outfitter owned by Quattro, at more favorable terms than the Ahrens purported transaction, including an upfront payment and guaranteed income. The white family members do see each other from time to time, as evidenced by Jim, Quattro, and Mac all showing up at a celebratory barbecue held by County Attorney-elect Blair Park in Marfa on Sunday. But it's unclear whether they will be able to communicate effectively during the long appeals process to avoid further conflict. As court records noted, Quattro White has communicated and attempted to coordinate hunts with Ahrens, but Ahrens has not responded to such efforts. Staff photo by Mary Cantrell. The owner of Eva's Salon, Eva Lucretia Olivas, sobs in the arms of the beauty bar's Fred Ramirez the morning after a fire destroyed her business she spent two decades cultivating. Alpine community mourns the loss of businesses' historic downtown structure in wake of devastating fire. By Mary Cantrell, MKCANTRELL at BigBenSentinel.com. Alpine. A vibrant hub of local businesses in downtown Alpine, all housed within the same historic structure, were destroyed in a catastrophic fire last weekend. The loss of a cooperative art gallery, bakery and cafe, hair salon, antique shop and jewelry store represents to locals the significant loss of not only personal property, but livelihoods and identities. The scope of it and the devastation of it is completely overwhelming, said the building's owner, Bill Ivey, who leased spaces to several vendors and maintained an office in the building. We lost so much. The one-story building, white with awnings and large storefront windows that went up in flames Sunday night, stretched nearly an entire block from 109 to 115 West Holland Avenue. It was subdivided to include Gallery on the Square, Judy's Bread and Breakfast, Eva's Salon, La Azteca, and Vintage Antiques and Snazzy Things, all of which were completely lost in the fire. As a business owner, it's a very difficult thing to deal with when all of a sudden, without any warning, you can't get into your business and it's all gone, said David Busey, the owner of La Azteca Jewelry Shop. Everything you've done, that I've done for 18 years, is gone. A lot of people are going through that right now. The cause of the fire has yet to be determined and is being investigated by fire marshals, said Alpine Volunteer Fire Department Chief Andrew Pierce. Pierce said the fire department is continually monitoring the site, but the fire is not at risk of spreading and is fully contained. There are plans to bring in some heavy equipment to cool down the hot rubble to put a stop to any flare-ups within the week, he said. Firefighters were dispatched to 115 West Holland Avenue, the gallery on the square, on Sunday at 3:45 p.m., following the report of a fire in the group of commercial buildings, Pierce said. Gallery foreman Gregory Tegerden told the Big Ben Sentinel his wife Amanda Calhoun, the gallery director, received a call from the artist who was working at the gallery on Sunday afternoon. Yos de Valdivia, an artist from Presidio Ojinaga, notified them that there was smoke coming in from the back of the gallery. Tegerden and Calhoun advised Valdivia to call 911 and exit the premises. The couple then headed to the building, arriving shortly before firefighters. Tegerden and Calhoun helped Valdivia out of the gallery, bringing along a couple of her paintings before Tegerden went behind the building to see what was going on, he said. He said he witnessed the vent hood of Judy's Bread and Breakfast, located on the cafe's roof, emitting flames, and a bystander attempting to quell the fire with a water hose. Pierce declined to specify where the fire started, citing the ongoing investigation. Taggart and sat across the street from the building as the fire department arrived and began fire suppression techniques, joined by several business owners as they became aware of the fire. He estimated that by 4:20 p.m., most of the fire appeared to be extinguished, and firefighters brought in a fan to extract smoke from the gallery. For around an hour to an hour and a half, things seemed to calm down, prompting business owners to begin assessing potential damage to their buildings, but by around 6 p.m., the entire structure went up in flames. By 7 p.m., it was totally engulfed by the fire. Pierce said the firefighters experienced difficulties reaching the fire due to its location and the layout of the building, which caused the delay. He said firefighters never left the scene and more personnel were called in. Jan Anderson, owner of Vintage Antiques and Snazzy Things, said she was able to save some items from her store, but once the fire began fully raging, it took down the structure quickly. It went from dark smoke and a little bit of fire here and there in the cafe to full flame everywhere in about 5 or 6 minutes. It was incredible, Anderson said. I just sat down and started shaking. I was devastated. That's the only words I can use. Empty and devastated. Pierce confirmed that once the structure's singular roof caught fire, the building declined rapidly. At a certain point, it progressed past the point of being able to save, Pierce said. We called the Mayday to evacuate all of our personnel, as well as evacuate any civilians within the immediate area. 4 firefighters were injured on the scene, 2 with overexertion and smoke inhalation, 1 with an ankle injury, and 1 with a concussion after the building blew up in front of them, Pierce said. 3 were transported to the hospital and released shortly after, he said. As far as the loss of the building and its contents are concerned, Ivy said he found out on Sunday that he did not have insurance on the building and that each business owner was responsible for insuring the contents of their space. The gallery on the square told the Sentinel they did not insure the contents of their space. Others did not wish their insured status to be shared publicly. The scorched remnants of the building would be closed off, inaccessible to all business owners and the public, until the fire marshal investigation is complete, which could be as early as Thursday, Pierce said. Artist John Davis approached first responders on Monday as they were guarding the building's wreckage, to ask if they were able to salvage any of his artwork that was on display in the front window of Gallery on the Square. It's a shame. It hurts me because I know this is people's belongings that are sitting here and just getting destroyed. But unfortunately, it's a hands-tied situation, Pierce told the Sentinel. Before Vintage Antiques and Snazzy Things took its place, Ivy ran Ivy's Emporium out of the space, a gallery and gift shop. Several historic fixtures from all over West Texas that the Ivys still stored there were likely lost in the fire, he said, as were personal items of value. Ivy said, for now, he and his family are taking it day by day, coming to terms with the loss of such a meaningful place where his boys grew up. He said they are eager to assess the damage on the ground and eventually organize cleanup efforts. The concept of rebuilding the historic structure is further complicated by the fact that the building was not insured, he said, and at this time he is not sure if a rebuild is possible. We really and truly don't know what's going to happen at this point, Ivy said. In 2000, when Ivy purchased the historic structure, downtown Alpine was dead, he said, featuring mostly empty, boarded-up buildings. He wanted to revitalize the downtown shopping district and held out for the right businesses to find to move into the shops. All of that hard work and resulting liveliness was lost in a matter of hours on Sunday night, Ivy said. Downtown Alpine was so wonderful with the galleries and bakery and everything that was going on, and nice shops. It looked good, Ivy said. It just breaks my heart and sickens me to see that go away. Boosie said the loss of the Holland Avenue businesses and the fire will change the whole attraction of Alpine because the area was the center of visitor attractions, right along Mural Alley. The 1911-built adobe and brick building previously served as Forchheimer's Dry Goods and Morrison's Variety Store. Pierce said the mainstay structure burning down is a loss for the entire Alpine community. Just seeing this building this way, this historic part of Alpine, seeing the tree behind it made a pit drop in my stomach, Pierce said. The owner of Eva's Salon, Ivy's longest-running tenant, Eva Lucretia Olivas, began sobbing the morning after the fire as she took in the sight of all that remained of the business she spent over two decades cultivating. Piles of smoldering rubble. Olivas attempted to save items in her salon before the fire swallowed up the entire structure, but wasn't able to grab much and wound up in the hospital Sunday evening for minor smoke inhalation. It's heartbreaking to see Eva lose everything that she's poured her heart into, said hairstylist Carly Bonsall. Not only was it her livelihood, but she loved that place. It's hard to watch her lose something that's so important to her. Her salon meant everything to her and to her family, said Oliva's daughter, Eva Calderon. My mother is completely devastated and in shock by the loss of her salon. Olivas is from Ojinaga and moved to Alpine in the 90s, where she went on to earn her American citizenship and open a salon in 2001. Calderon said being a business owner gave her mom the financial independence she needed to raise two children and allowed her to give back to the community. Olivas opened up the space for fundraisers and concerts and let her daughter paint colorful murals in the prominent storefront windows. Calderon said her mom's generosity extends to her clients, many of whom are senior citizens unable to care for themselves, who she sees on a weekly basis. Olivas has even done clients' hair when they pass away in preparation for their funerals. Calderon said her mother has been offered positions at other local salons in the wake of the fire, and a friend plans to set up a bank account to receive donations specifically for Olivas. For now, the family is still processing the immense loss of the salon and its contents. So many irreplaceable treasures, family items, and memories have been taken away from us, Calderon said. My mom is trying to take one day at a time right now. She was hoping to retire soon, and losing everything so brutally has made it difficult to know what the next step is. Anderson, a 78-year-old retired teacher and coach, took over Vintage Antiques and Snazzy Things from its previous owners during the pandemic. She said, at first, she saw the gig as a way to stay busy in her retirement, but it slowly grew to mean more to her, and without it, there would be a huge hole in her life. The more I was there, the more I met people, the more emotionally involved I got with the place, Anderson said. The people coming in and out and visiting with us, it just became a major part of my life. She said the shop, which runs on consignment, had around 20 active vendors before the fire. Anderson said she plans to fall back on retirement funds, given the unforeseen destruction of her business, but expressed concern over what a loss of income could mean for her shop neighbors. The people on either side of me, that was their livelihood, Anderson said. What are they going to do? My heart just breaks for them. Alpine Historical Society, a local nonprofit organization, announced plans on Monday to set up a bank account under its stewardship for affected businesses and their employees to receive donations for recovery efforts. The initial focus of this fund will be to assist the affected businesses in relocating and reestablishing operations quickly in nearby facilities and restore income for those affected, the organization wrote in a press release. Funds will be directed to those businesses that secure new locations, ensuring they can resume serving our community without undue delay. Tegerton said the 27-member artist co-op that makes up the Big Bend Arts Council, which operated Gallery on the Square, is very positive about getting back together and not letting the BBAC community die from this. The gallery's definitely gone, but we're wanting to establish another place of business so cooperative members can make money and get something going, Tegerton said. Jean Cargo, a local artist who has been a member of the co-op for 5 years and lost artwork in the fire, said her main takeaway from the tragic event was that no one was injured. I can always do more artwork, Cargo said. All of the artwork was able to be removed from Catchlight Gallery, located west of the burned-down building, on Sunday evening. Heidi Wasserman offered to store works in her gallery nearby, and everyone from visitors staying at the Holland Hotel to Sheriff Ronnie Dodson helped rescue art from the at-risk building. Catchlight Gallery, now the only remaining commercial business on the block, suffered minor water and smoke damage. The building directly east of the devastation, currently the Big Bend Regional Hospital District, was built in 1904 and once housed the First National Bank. It was saved due to a fire break between the buildings, which was installed after a 1907 fire and saved the building once before in a 1911 fire, with only visible water stains on floors and ceilings and a minor smoky smell, said Executive Director J.D. Newsom. Newsom said he met with a structural engineer who confirmed there was no major damage to the organization's building. Pierce said he is grateful for the community support, including the donations of food and water for first responders and for the work of the Alpine, Marfa, Fort Davis, Marathon, and Terlingua Fire Departments, and the Texas A&M Forest Service. It's a hard loss, but I'm extremely proud of the work that my guys and the surrounding departments did, as well as the support for our injured firefighters, Pierce said. To donate to the Alpine Historical Society Recovery Fund, visit their Facebook page, Historic Alpine. To learn more about a potential fundraiser, specifically for Eva's Salon, visit their Facebook page, Eva's Salon. Photo by Jennifer Pittenger. 4 firefighters were injured in Sunday's fire, 2 with overexertion and smoke inhalation, 1 with an ankle injury, and 1 with a concussion after the building blew up in front of them.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, May 30th. Swanson issues permanent injunction against 4th Street property owner. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Before the regular city council meeting got underway on Tuesday, council members District 4 Ivy Valenzuela and District 5 Richard Hawkins were sworn in for another 2-year term. District 1 member Gerald Stava was absent and will be sworn in before the next meeting, City Secretary Tanya Todd said. All 3 candidates were unopposed for the May 4th election, therefore the election was canceled. The 3 were all issued certificates of election during the last council meeting. The council also unanimously voted Jeppy Wilson to continue as mayor pro tem. In other business, City Attorney Justin Till updated the council on the district court case the city filed against property owner Macario Calderon of 605 West 4th Street for the huge woodpile on his property. The non-jury trial took place last Tuesday, May 21st, in front of 143rd District Judge Mike Swanson, whence a permanent injunction was issued. A permanent injunction is a court order requiring a person to do or cease doing a specific action that is issued as a final judgment in a case. Calderon had constructed a massive woodpile, and the property has been on the city's code enforcement officer's radar for well over a year. Since Calderon failed to get the property cleaned up, city officials were able to get permission last September from his mother to move forward with the cleanup. City crews spent the day removing wood, railroad ties, large rocks, pipes, and a fence which was out of city code and weighed over an estimated 100 tons. All the removed debris was taken to the city landfill. City Manager Rex Thee told the council, quote, "Since that time, Calderon has begun constructing another wood pile on the property, which is a huge safety and fire hazard to the property and surrounding properties. We took this to district court in large part because it opened up civil penalties against the property owner and occupants that we wouldn't have at municipal court," Till said. Director of Public Works, Richard Covington, took the stand at the trial and gave testimony. Quote, "Richard presented information including the potential threat to health and safety posed by Calderon's new structure in the back of the home leaning up against a pole which has electricity going to it," Till said. Swanson signed the requested injunction order. Quote, "Because the other party didn't show up in court, I tacked on a $500 fee for good measure," Till added. Going forward, if Calderon fails to comply, city officials can still use the municipal court to file against the property owner or occupants, but also have the option to file a motion for sanctions to compel the property owner and occupants to clean it up. Quote, "It is a permanent injunction and will not expire, so we'll have those options open to us perpetually or until there is a new property owner," Till explained. If the city has to clean up the property again, a second lien will be placed on the property, Thee said. The ownership of the property will stay with the owner, but the city will hold a lien against the property for the cost of demolition. Quote, "The lien will stay with the property. So if the land is ever sold, the lien would have to be paid before the new owners could do anything with the lot," Thee added. "Although the lien stays with the city, at no time will the property belong to the city or be assumed by the city." Following the previously mentioned agenda item, the council also approved a resolution from the city code enforcement regarding 5 properties in violation of city code for either trash, weeds, items in the alleyway, and/or dangerous structures. The properties have all been given a first notice and did not comply, so this will allow code enforcement to follow up with a final notice and possibly move forward with court action if needed. Those reported to still be in violation are 602 South James, owned by Ronnie and Patricia Tone, 903 South Eric, owned by Philip Schroeder, 1003 South Allen, owned by Socorro Solis Lozoya, 112 South Alice, owned by Felipe Arroyo, and 503 South Dwight, owned by Alfonso and Esmeralda Lopez. Once a second notice is issued, the property owner has 10 days to comply, or the case could be turned over to Monahans Municipal Court for further action. Monthly department reports from the airport manager, MEDC minutes and financials, building inspector, animal control, municipal court, and minutes of the May 14th meeting were also approved. Along with Thee and Till, council members present for the meeting were Jeppy Wilson, Calvin Carroll, Richard Hawkins, Ivy Valenzuela, and Mayor Adam Steen. Member Gerald Stava was absent. The City Council meets every second and fourth Tuesday of the month at 3 p.m. Anyone wanting to address the City Council on the topics addressed in this story or any other topic may do so by asking to be added to the meeting agenda in the City Secretary's office located inside City Hall or by appearing at the meeting during the public comment section of the meeting, which is on every agenda. The next City Council meeting will be held at 3 p.m. on Tuesday, June 11th, in the Council Chambers at City Hall, 112 West 2nd Street. Precinct 3 voters pick Redmond as next commissioner. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. Billy Redmond won Ward County Precinct 3 commissioner's runoff election on Tuesday, May 28th, securing more votes than his runoff opponent, Bill Clayton. According to Ward County Clerk Denise Valle, Redmond received 50% of the votes with 220, and opponent Clayton garnered 45% at 200 votes. A total of 440 votes were cast of the 1,692 registered voters who reside in Precinct 3. In March, Redmond and Clayton were separated by one vote, 251 to 250. A runoff was required due to neither candidate having more than half of the votes. Redmond will run unopposed in the November general election. Quote, I'm looking forward to working for the citizens of Precinct 3 and Ward County. I have always enjoyed working for the public, and I'm excited to serve the community in this new capacity, Redmond said. Republican Tony Gonzalez defeated Brandon Herrera in the runoff election in Ward County and district-wide. The incumbent's March primary opponents forced him into a runoff with Herrera after Gonzalez failed to earn support from a majority of voters. By 10:30 p.m. Tuesday, Gonzalez had 51.06% of the vote to Herrera's 48.9%, a difference of just over 500 votes. In Ward County, Gonzalez secured 339 votes to Herrera's 335 of the 674 votes cast. In order to keep his seat in Congress, Gonzalez will face Democrat Santos Limon in November's general election. Commissioners approved Thomas Ward plaque. The story was written by Jan Cranfield. Ward County commissioners met Monday morning for a short regular meeting, during which the commissioners gave a yes nod to purchasing a 24-inch by 36-inch bronze plaque for $4,500 that will be a mate to the recently purchased Alamo letter plaque. The plaque about Thomas William Ward, who the county is named after, will display a short history of his life. The Alamo letter plaque, which depicts the letter Travis wrote requesting reinforcements for the battle against Santa Ana, was approved during a prior commissioners' meeting. Both plaques are to be placed inside the courthouse for public viewing. Quote, I didn't know about Thomas William Ward until I started a search into the history of our county. He is really a very interesting individual, as well as Ward County's namesake, Ward County Judge Greg Holly said. The commissioners also accepted a $2,000 donation made to the sheriff's office from Continental Resources to be used for anything needed. Ward County Sheriff Freron Valle was not on hand to accept the donation. Encore's easement request for electrical lines to be installed at the new sheriff's office and jail was also given consent by the commissioners. A bid for electrical work at the Pyote Park was submitted by K-Bar Electric for $50,500 and was awarded to them by the commissioners. The commissioners also accepted the deputization and oath of office for the newly appointed Ward County Clerk, Julia Salceda. In other regular business, the commissioners approved the minutes from the last meeting, the officers' reports, approved paying the county's bills. There were no budget amendments reported. The next commissioners' meeting will be held on Monday, June 10th at 9:30 a.m. in the Ward County Courthouse, 400 South Allen. Individuals who would like to address the court to ask questions or inform the commissioners of problems in their precinct or Ward County can call Judge Greg Holly at 432-943-3209, discuss their question or concern, and ask to be placed on the agenda for the next commissioners' meeting. County pools open and closed. The story was written by Jan Cranfill. It is officially summertime in Monahans. The Hill Park swimming pool opened officially to the public for its summer run on Saturday. The pool is open Tuesday through Sunday with tiny tot hours from 10 a.m. to 12 noon and public hours from 12:30 to 5:30 p.m. The admission cost is $1 per person. Pools are also open from 2 to 6 p.m. in Wicket and Piute with $1 admission. The pools in Grand Falls and Barstow are closed this summer. Precinct 3 Commissioner Dexter Nichols made the decision a few weeks ago to not open the Grand Falls pool, saying the pool is dangerous. The budget for repair to the pool and staffing salaries, including lifeguards, had already been approved by the Commissioner's Court, according to Ward County Judge Greg Holly. Quote, I didn't know until about 3 to 4 weeks ago that the Grand Falls pool was not going to open, Holly said. Precinct 3 Commissioner-elect Billy Redmond said, quote, I am willing to do whatever I can to get the Grand Falls pool in shape to open, starting with an inspection of the pool's problems to attain the level of fixability, even though I am not officially in office yet. The pool has been leaking for the last 4 to 5 years, and depending upon the cause, could possibly be repaired, Redmond added. When called for a comment about the Barstow pool being closed, Precinct 1 Commissioner Tino Sanchez said, quote, I closed the pool 4 years ago because it has cracks in it, end quote. Precinct 1 Republican candidate Guy Thames said, quote, If I am elected, I will investigate all possible solutions for the repair or replacement of a pool for the kids of Barstow, end quote. Two county pools in Wicket and Piute have been restored by Precinct 4 Commissioner Eddie Nelms' work crew. The Wicket pool was built in 1953 and the Piute pool around 1965. Quote, We kept with the repairs. Every year, we fill cracks with an industrial-strength cement repair compound, repair pumps, lines and drains, etc. You have to stay on top of the repairs to avoid major issues down the road. My crew does an amazing job on what amounts to a lot of hard work, but it is all for the kids of this county. They deserve the best we can give them. If I run into a major problem, I turn to my extra super crew of three, Clay Gardner, John Coda, and Juan Urquiza, and they help get the job done. I extended an offer of help in any possible way to the commissioners in the other precincts. As I have said many times before, we do everything possible for the kids, and the pools are one of the few things in the small towns that offer summer fun for them to enjoy, Nelm said.
Hi, it's Jack. I'm reading the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, May 30th, 2024. City votes to make Main Street one-way. The Fort Stockton City Council met on Tuesday, May 28th at their scheduled meeting. Mayor Paul Casillas and Councilman R.J. Bernal arrived at the meeting after it started, so Mayor Pro Tem James Warnock commenced the meeting at 5:30. Darren Hodgins led the invocation, and Reuben Falcon led the pledges, and the court went directly into proclamations. The first was dedicated, first proclamation dedicated 600 West El Paso Street as Veterans Memorial Park, and the board moved on to the consent agenda, where the board approved previous minutes of meetings. The board then read resolution number 24 for the second time as required, a resolution of the Fort Stockton Economic Development 4B Corporation approving the distribution of funds to the Fort Stockton Main and First LLC for the rehabilitation of the historic property known as Springhurst Hotel in the amount not to exceed $750,000. Then the court approved the distribution of funds for $350,000 for infrastructure costs related to the rehab of the Hearst Hotel. According to Remy Ramos, executive director of the Development Corporation, these funds are for things like water, sewer, gas, water suppression, and telecommunications. Item 7 of the agenda saw the court's approval of proposals for fully insured rates for employee group-sponsored life and accidental death and death coverage for the city of Fort Stockton. Item 8 was a proposal for CIS systems for the police department through vendor computer information systems using contract for technology solutions, products, and services. In other news, the council then discussed making Main Street a one-way from 5th Street to Gonzales Loop. City Manager Frank Rodriguez explained the proposal further. The priority is promoting safety and to allow parking ability to be uniform in that one direction. Our goal is that if the council approves, we can order the proper signage for every intersection with the potential date of making this possible, if council approves, by September 1st. And this kind of coincides with the potential of the Springhurst. It will help the downtown area with that flow of traffic and make it a whole lot safer. You have the daycare, funeral home, and then you have a new food establishment, some recreational areas, and some clothing stores. This will help people walking and the flow of traffic. Dickinson Boulevard to 5th Street will remain two-way. The motion passed unanimously. The City Council approved the purchase of an outdoor movie screen, projector, and cart from CSI through Byboard Government Purchasing Co-op for $62,000. The dimensions of the screen are 32 by 18 feet wide, 32 feet wide by 18 feet high. According to Rodriguez, this is an outside movie screen that can potentially be moved, and the goal is to put it in the Hodges Pavilion in the concrete area, and it will allow people to sit and watch movies once it gets dark. In the event we need to adjust it, move it somewhere else, it has that capability. According to City IT Manager Lawson Kemp, this equipment could be here just a couple of weeks after placing the order. The screen and proposed area could accommodate 500 people or 90 vehicles for a drive-in theater configuration. The council next approved the Memorandum of Understanding for non-federal agencies between the Fort Stockton Police Department and the United States Marshal Service Fugitive Task Force. Item 12 saw the council approve an amendment to the Tourism Board bylaws, removing the requirement for the mayor to automatically serve as a board member and the council as a whole to appoint a member of the Tourism Board. The Tourism Board would then select a chairperson and a vice chair. Mayor Paul Casillas then submitted his resignation from the Tourism Board at item 13. And item 14 had Mayor Pro Tem Warnock nominate Councilman Reuben Falcon as the new tourism member. All motions passed. The council then recessed from the regular meeting and went to closed executive session to discuss personnel matters, IAW Texas Open Meetings Act, Texas Government Code concerning attorney-client matters. The court reconvened regular business and adjourned at 6:54. The next regular meeting for the city council is scheduled for June 10th at 5:30. Several donations seen at recent commissioners' meeting. The Pecos County Commissioners Court met on Tuesday, May 28. Judge Schuster commenced the meeting through invocation. After a quorum was established, the court approved minutes of the previous meeting. The fourth agenda was postponed at Judge Schuster's request to await visitors from Alpine relevant to the agenda item. The court then approved the rate of $90 to Pecos County Memorial Hospital for county employee physicals. The court approved $100 from the Pecos County State Bank and a $1,000 donation from the Pecos County Water Improvement District for the Imperial Public Library's summer reading program. The court approved a $100 donation from the PCSB to the Kiyonosa Public Library Summer Reading Program. The court then approved a donation of Chrome books from FSISD for Kiyonosa Public Library in Precinct 4. The court next approved the request from Precinct 3 to use the Triflex mower budgeted funds for lease purchase of a sprayer from Toro. The next item saw the court approve the lease purchase of the sprayer equipment for $1,716. The court approved the request from Precinct 2 to purchase a portable storage building for Comanche Springs pool equipment to be paid from Park 2 budgeted funds of $8,659. The court revisited item 4, court to present the Texas Historical Commission's Distinguished Award to the Pecos County Historical Commission in recognition of high level of performance. Judge Schuster explained Paul Weatherby is here to receive the Distinguished Service Award from the State of Texas Historical Commission and was asked this weekend to acknowledge Orlando Terrazas. Terrazas is the Pecos County Historical Commission treasurer. He passed away Saturday evening in Houston after a long battle with cancer. Some of the family members of Orlando are here, so when we make the presentation, we'd like to make it in memory of Orlando Terrazas. He was a vital part of the Historical Commission. He moved back from New Mexico several years ago, where he was a teacher and a coach. Orlando dedicated a lot of time to the Historical Commission, and he gave his time freely. He went above and beyond. The court then resumed at approving the donation from Rio Grande Electric Cooperative of 3 40-foot utility poles for Precinct 2. The court considered the treasurer to act upon services of BABD Data Services for a federal filing requirement annual health plan report and to issue payment of $1,875. The court approved the contract between Pecos County Precinct 3 and 5C for material water truck rental. The court approved the purchase of an F-150 pickup from Byboard to be replaced from accident insurance claim for $59,900. Contingency funds were approved to make up the difference in the price of the truck and the amount of the insurance claim in the amount of $11,220. The court then approved the request from Pecos County Water District 1 to cut the Water Street precinct in Precinct 4 for a water line. Next, the court approved the return of cold planter attachment for skid steer to Yellow House John Deere and to accept cold planter attachment at no additional cost. The court approved a donation from XTO Energy to Pecos County Fire Department in the amount of $3,000. They approved the purchase of ventilators for EMS for 3 units with trade-in from Hamilton Medical with previously budgeted funds, but this item was tabled until further notice. The court quickly approved the Predator Control Report from USDA APHIS Wildlife Services, which showed that from April 1 to April 30th, 46 coyotes and 13 feral hogs were eliminated. The court heard the county treasurer's financial report and the auditor's report. Finally, the court discussed the 2025 budget workshop and adjourned at noon. The next scheduled county commissioners meeting will be held on June 10th at 10 o'clock. Places to go and things to do. May 30th, Thursday night, Scramble, Desert Pine Golf Course, 5:30 p.m., tee off at 6. Joe's Place Cantina, karaoke night, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m. Annie Riggs Summer Off the Patio, Jesse Stratton Band Performance, Father and Son, at 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. May 31st, Movies in the Park, Wish, James Rooney, Memorial Park Pavilion, 9 p.m. Alley-Oop Festival begins at 5 p.m. Friday. Free entry at Alley-Oop Park in Iran. June 1st, Alley-Oop Festival begins at 8 a.m. $10 entry at Alley-Oop Park. Paint Your Partner Paint Parties, $40 for two painters, adults only. Sign up at Mariah's Party and Paint Square site, 3 p.m. to 5 p.m. Location, Joe's Place. June 8th, Let's Clean Up, St. Joseph's Cemetery Cleanup Day. Volunteers needed. Bring your tools, 7:30 a.m. Location, 407 West El Paso Street. June 7th, Live at Zero Stone Free Concert, The March Divide, 7 to 9 p.m. June 13th, Annie Riggs Simmer Off the Patio, Kimmy Bitter Performance, 7:30 p.m. June 14th, Summer Jam featuring DePranda, Beady Beady Banda, Stakitis Car Show, Hodges Pavilion, 6 p.m. June 18th, Fort Stockton Historical Society One-Day Summer Camp, Forts and Frontiers Day, with staff from Fort Lancaster. Kids between the ages of 11 and 17 are welcome to participate and learn with soldiers and laundresses from the 1860s and 70s. The adventure will begin at 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. with lunch included. Cost is $10. June 21st, live at Zero Stone Free Concert, Rick Reese with A Few Too Many, 7 to 9 p.m. June 27th, Annie Riggs Summer Off the Patio, Lee Mathis and the Brutally Handsome Performance, 7:30 p.m. Gonzalez prevails over Herrera. Incumbent Tony Gonzalez, District 23 House Rep, again prevailed over Republican challenger Brandon Herrera. In a highly advertised runoff election, Gonzalez garnered 50% to Herrera's 49%, according to the Associated Press. Locally, 514 Pecos County residents voted to keep Gonzalez, 263 votes, to Herrera's 254 votes. All votes were unofficial until canvassed. District 23, which stretches from San Antonio to El Paso, represents more of the U.S.-Mexico border than any other district in the country. It is the largest in Texas and includes much of West Texas, reaching into the Rio Grande Valley, including Del Rio and parts of Metro San Antonio. Gonzalez will face Democratic challenger Santos Limón in the November general election. Elpidio Pete Garcia passed away recently. Visitation will be held on Sunday, June 2nd from 1 to 8 p.m. Rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. at Eternity Funeral Home. Mass will be held on Monday, June 3rd at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish with Father Francis officiating. Burial will follow at Fort Stockton Catholic Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to Eternity Funeral Home. Concepcion Chon Gomez passed away May 26th. Visitation will be May 30th from 12 p.m. to 7 at Heritage Funeral Home with a Big Bend in Fort Stockton. Rosary will be at 7 p.m. at the funeral home. Funeral Mass will be Friday, May 31st at 2 p.m. at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Heritage Funeral Home of the Big Bend.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.